Blog Talk Radio.
You're asking me to vouch for you. Well, the funny thing about vouching for someone, James, is that when that someone shows himself to be less than what was promised, every decision you take from that point on is second-guessed. And that, in my line of work, is suicide. And besides, why does a cool, mellow fellow like yourself want to hang around with a bunch of stuffy old white guys?
Same reason you want to hang around those stuffy old white guys. Power. Connection. But let's keep it real. I'm just a cool, mellow fellow. Just shucking and jiving. Crip walking, basketball playing, singing, dancing, and taking out your garbage. That's what I am to you.
You're right. You are African-American. And myself and my friends, for the most part, don't care for the company of African-Americans. Quite frankly, we're entertained by you. We're thrilled by your high-flying acrobatics on the basketball court. That wonderful sense of rhythm you have. Your animal athleticism. But apart from that, we have no use for you. Understand? I mean, let's face it, James. Do you set a place at your dinner table for your pit bulls? Now, is this keeping it real enough for you?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a logic.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, ladies and gents. This is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Mind you, we're under another storm watch. Another storm watch. We're getting hit left and right. Upwards of perhaps 8 inches of snow. I think the South is going to be hit even harder than ourselves. It is what it is. Meanwhile, you can always edify yourselves with our sounds, our thoughts, and our topics. Folks, again, this is the Midweek in Review. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We implore you to give us a call if you like, to give us your protestations, questions, and or disagreements, what have you. We can handle it. We're made of tough stuff. Folks, I'm flubbing my words because coming back from bronchitis, I'm probably at around 87-88%. I was at 80% a few days ago, so the numbers are rising. The numbers are rising. All right, listen, let's go to a quick Herb Alt classic black rock, psychedelic soul, Afro-punk groove. This is, I guess, just classic groove. Debbie Harry with, I suspect, Nile Rodgers, the legendary guitarist Nile Rodgers. This is Backfired. See you in a few moments. Let's groove.
Backfire.
diplomatic drag depressed me. The glitter in your eyes undressed me. You were poly slick, really thick, wasting time, dropping lines like I could get you into movies. But we wound up at whole jars for hamburgers to the backfire. Your plan backfire. Backfire. My man, your plan backfire in your face. To steal my mind was your objective. The way you spoke was too aggressive.
Groove there. That was Debbie Harry, Blondie's Debbie Harry. At that point, she was going solo, going for Delph with Backfired. I suspect you can tell the production, most definitely not Nile Rodgers, longtime Grammy winner and a recent Grammy winner with his work with the equally mighty Pharrell Williams. Folks, Midweek in Review, call in number 646-915-9620. And of course, my partner in White Collar Crime, the Captain, Captain Kirk. You're needed in engineering and the ready room. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Now, let me get into my informational harangue on this one. Now, a concomitant of doing this show is that when people participate in the show by calling in or actually being on the board for a particular topic, when they happen to be in town and you're available, they will want to see you and meet up with you. So, that being said, the great Captain Kirk met up finally with the great Sergio Mims yesterday in Manhattan. Sergio Mims was rather lucid, and rather entertaining. And he has a request for Afro Nerd and the Captain. He said he needs more show. And I think a lot of you feel the same way. He said, this is the great Sergio Mims, he said, there's no reason why that this show couldn't be on 3 hours a night. You guys have a lot of things to talk about, a lot of strong topics, and you do it so well. He gave us a lot of praise. So I said to him, I said, Sergio, I will try my best, Afro Nerd and myself, to honor your request. With some luck, this will be brought about. But here's the reality of it. It is luck. Now, not to go off on a tangent, but it's tangentially related. You see, a lot of people talk about hard work and being super intelligent. These are factors in getting lucky. But let's look at it. There are plenty of people that do work hard. Look at the immigrants that come to this country. No one really works harder than these individuals. And if you look at the immigration population, we could say working hard, one thing will happen. You will not starve. You will be able to pay your bills. But that does not guarantee high-end success. The people who are most lucky are the ones that do things at the high end. Let's look at it. Let's look at some of the people. Actor, actress, have to be very lucky. Yes, you have to be talented, not all the time, but yes, luck is a huge factor. Director has to be very lucky. Athlete, come on, you have to be born a certain way, have to have the right parents, have to attend the right school. You can't get injured. That's luck all the way. Come on, let's be real here. Next, going further with it, winning Lotto or Powerball, you got to be lucky. And if you notice, the more luck you have, normally the more fame and more money you have also. Yes, there is some work involved, but luck, a lot of times, is the deciding factor. Now I'll talk about something a bit more mundane, if those examples are a little far removed. Look at your wife. You got lucky. You have a beautiful wife. You met her somewhere. You just happened to be there, and you started talking. You look at your kids. You have nice kids, good-looking kids. They're doing the right thing. You got lucky. Now, of course, you'll say, well, I did this. I trained them this way. I trained them that way. Yes, but look how many people have kids, and they're born with all of these birth defects. That wasn't you. You got lucky. So that being said, with some luck, Afro Nerd and myself will be able to honor the great Sergio Mims' request. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yes, first, I'm glad that you did speak to Serge. That's very nice. He's been a long-time supporter. And I'm also thinking that, and I might have referenced this before, Captain, the book by Malcolm Gladwell, The Outliers, and it talks about, you know, one of the most famous things out of that book is this notion of 10,000 hours of doing something, whatever it is, whatever you do consistently, put in at minimum 10,000 hours of work, you may be deemed an expert in that particular field. We've been doing this for a long time. I don't know if we're quite in the 10,000-hour category, but if you factor other things along with our on-air personalities, on-air work, it might be approaching 10,000 hours. Anyway, my belief is that we will end up somewhere, and also we will provide additional programming. Just in when we had a gathering, I don't know if we even really spoke about that too much. A few weeks ago during the NFL Super Bowl game, and some personal friends of ours, we got together, Captain, and the mighty Uncanny Daryl B was in attendance, and you guys were going on in a rather animated way about sports. And Daryl is equally as adept with his sports knowledge as he is with comic book pop culture knowledge. So just as a side thing, you and I have been toying with this idea for a number of years now, that we should have even an imprint for that, where I don't even have to be involved in it, to be honest with you. I'll pop my head in here and there for certain topics I might have a feeling for, but you guys are really great just doing that. Because I'm sure we have an audience that will probably see a different side of the Afro Nerd brand by having something that's geared towards sports. I mean, heck, Spike Lee has his own sports talk imprint, I think within the last 2 weeks maybe, courtesy of SiriusXM. So, and he, you know, he's pretty good. We know he's a sports guy. So it seems like it's an excellent fit for him. Why not have something under the Afro Nerd umbrella? So, again, I'm glad that you did speak to Sergio, and we will come up with more programming. And also, listen, next week I'm supposed to have a conference with Jocelyn Cooper with Afro Punk. So it's a process. It is a process. You always yell the time, Captain. Luck is involved. But, you know, it's a process. Things have to line up. The dominoes have to fall the way that they do. They might fall. So I just think things will happen the way they're supposed to happen. Plain and simple. Anecdotally, yours truly got a chance to piss head out and into Armstrong Williams, noted conservative pundit and entrepreneur. I was able to have a couple of words on his show. So that should be something to listen to, something fun, funny. But when you describe yourself as a Afro nerd, it causes a ruckus, Captain. I don't know if you might have heard the exchange. I think I did play it for you. But I want the audience to peep this because, to me, it's fascinating. When you put black and nerd together, somehow it is more controversial than the other N-word. I think it is. It causes a stir. You know, Afro nerd, black nerd, you know, hot, cold. I mean, you know, the two don't mix or something. I don't know what that is. Anyway, for S and Giggles, let's listen to the Afro Nerd on the Armstrong Williams Show, courtesy of SiriusXM. Hold on. Let's get to it.
So much for taking time from going to the gym to give this perspective because it was so important, brother. Thank you. Thank you. Afro Nerd in New York. You're on the air. Thank you for your patience.
Afro Nerd?
Yes, Mr. Williams.
Right. Yes, sir.
First of all, I have to say I appreciate your program because one of the problems with our community is that we do not have enough voices, really enough voices on the conservative side, just to give balance for people of color. There's an assumption that white folks, putting it out there, white folks have all this multiplicity of different perspectives, but black people are supposed to think progressively. And you can't have at least an alternate side so you can make a decision. Can we hear from Thomas Sowell? Can we hear from Shelby Steele? Can we hear from Michael Steele? That's just one quick thing. Also, with this case, I'm at this point where if you're dealing with babies being shot in the head, if you're dealing with adults who have been able to maybe make it to 80 or 90 and are being killed by stray bullets coming through their homes. We're talking about immediacy. These problems demand immediate solutions. I would say, as much as some folks have a problem with it, I live in New York, I really didn't have a problem with stop and frisk because no one wants to talk about it honestly. Mm-hmm. These things are happening. They're not happening in a vacuum, and not every black male was being accosted. Mm-hmm. If they're dealing with a specific profile, or a scrutiny, just if you were going to go for a job, you're being scrutinized. But we cannot have an honest discussion in the black community to deal with what is really happening. If you're dealing with babies dying in Chicago by the hundreds, it may come to the point where you might have to have martial law. They wanted stop and frisk.
A 12-year-old schoolgirl in Baltimore last week was robbed at gunpoint on her way to school. 12-year-old schoolgirl.
How traumatic is this?
That's immediacy.
Isn't it unbelievable?
You might have to have martial law.
Afro Nerd, brother.
Martial law.
Thank you. And thank you for your appreciation of different perspectives, because if everybody agrees, somebody is not growing and somebody's dying. Thank you, brother. Charles in New York.
I really like the endorsement from Afro Nerd of Armstrong, though. I just have to say,
I'm not going to endorse him. It's endorsement
Afro
of the truth.
Nerd.
It has nothing to do with me.
Armstrong.
It's about the truth. It's about the truth or not. Hello, Charles in New York.
All right. You know, I did my familiar spiel shtick, but my spiel, my shtick, I stick to it. It's not really, you know, it's a shtick, but it's an honest shtick. I just find it interesting that just the term Afro-nerd seems to engender something with people. It causes people to, I don't know, it's weird. It's our brand, but it's probably one of the reasons why I think we will be successful, because it's like McDonald's at this point. You mention Afro-nerd, it causes a problem. But it's not to be forgotten also. Not to be forgotten. I will call up a game, and they will know who I am. I've called up programs. You would figure there would be somebody else named after. There's only one Afro-nerd. I find that fascinating. That showed you how deep this is. Maybe Blurred, if someone calls themselves a Blurred, there might be more than one Blurred. Programs have been gone through screeners, Captain, and before they actually pick up to know that it's not somebody else, they say, oh, I know this guy. Well, come on. What do you think, Captain? We'll move along.
Well, first they say you get the name and you get the fame, right? And then from there, you get the power. And then from the power, you start taking the money.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. So now when you say your name, you know, you got the name. Now you're starting to get some of the fame. And after a little while, you go to the power phase. And we start taking the money. Just like that. Just like that.
Sounds like a good look. Folks, again, Midweek in Review. This is actually February as well. Before you know it, Captain America will be upon us April 4th. That's something that's in my mind's eye, to be honest with you. Okay, actually, let's just get into it. We have quite a few things to discuss. First up, let's talk about I didn't get a chance to pull a clip for this one, and I wish I did. But it's an exchange that was heard around the world. Very brief kind of thing. Maybe it dovetails, Captain, when you think about it, maybe it dovetails on a topic we will discuss later on involving Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. He made comments recently about perception that America has become more sensitive about difference, more sensitive about race. And this is going on, in his eyes, going on since he was a youth during the 60s, during the tumultuous 60s, he, in his belief, that we are more sensitive as a nation about race. So I say that because of this thing that happened with a KTLA media reporter out of L.A., in his interview with noted actor Samuel L. Jackson from 100-some-odd films, hardest working man in show business, definitely. Anyway, in this conversation, they were talking about some project that Mr. Jackson was involved in, and then the KTLA reporter, who happens to be white, offhandedly says, oh, what reaction did you get, speaking to Mr. Jackson, what reaction did you get with your Super Bowl commercial? And he said, Super Bowl commercial? What Super Bowl commercial? What are you talking about? Oh, I said, oh, wait a minute. You are getting me confused with Larry Fishburne. I'm sorry. I'm not Larry Fishburne. So rather masterfully, but not getting off, continues to ride and embarrass this reporter for getting him confused with another notable black actor, Lawrence Fishburne. Now, there's a dual-sided thing to this. Now, I wish I had enough time to isolate the clip, not only of this particular exchange, but of also of another clip with CNN's Don Lemon when he talks about this. And, you know, as of late, with Mr. Lemon's last quarter remarks about improvement, he's being likened to being a black conservative. That's the funny thing. He is being likened to being a black conservative, even though for the most part he is a liberal, if not a gay liberal. But he had a couple of points of interest that put his needle toward the conservative side, just a few points, and he's forever doomed. He made some comments in responding to this controversy with Sam Jackson, and he said, "Listen, there are you know things within races that you can make points that sometimes there are people who are similar looking intra-racially." He said that he admitted that when T.J. Holmes, another news reporter, journalist at CNN, formerly at CNN, when he did work at CNN with Don Lemon, there would be confusion between these two. And that he put their pictures side by side, they kind of sort of do look similarly. And then he went through different racial groups, you know, another actress and a CNN correspondent, and they kind of sort of looked together. He said that occurs. He didn't think that Sam Jackson and Lawrence Fishburne look alike. But because he did go into the conversation of sometimes you are dealing with people that do look similarly, there are issues with people cross-racially not being able to know who is who. But I thought in this case, I thought Sam Jackson had a point. Now, I'll go deeper into it. I don't want to be so verbose. Captain, what are your thoughts about how this is coming across? What about the rightness or wrongness, but let's say rightness or wrongness on the part of Mr. Jackson about how he felt? What do you think was going on here? Explain to our audience.
Well, I think what was going on here was the lack of professionalism on the person who was interviewing Samuel Jackson. Reason why is not just so much he tried to wing it. Okay, I seen the commercial. I know what's going on. No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't. If they were a bit more professional, and this happens all the time, all right? And no, I'm not going to say all the time. It happens too often, a little too often, and it can make people uncomfortable. So I won't say all the time. That's what happened there. You see, if he had the proper paperwork in front of him and realized what was going on, so to cover yourself in case you don't know, doesn't happen. That's what being professional at this level, that's what you're supposed to do if you're at this level. They didn't do that. And it happens a lot. It happens a lot, too often for comfort. And the way Samuel Jackson scolded him, I loved it. Because he didn't get angry. He just kept going and said, I'm going to spank you for being an idiot. Now, some people might say, he went on and on and spanked him because he was white. Maybe that's true. I don't know. Maybe that is true. But the way he handled it, I thought was hilarious. I thought he was very professional, Samuel Jackson, in what he was doing. And I bet you next time they will not make a mistake like that. Because from your professionalism, forget about all the racial overtones, your professionalism is lacking. And it happens too often for comfort. Big, big, getting big, big check and everything else. Big, big platform, and here you go. It happens a little too often on the big platform. You understand? A little too often. Channeling Santa Claus is definitely white, and Jesus is definitely also white. We all know Jesus was not white, according to the book. Where is your professionalism? You understand? What are you trying to say? Your racial overtones, your racial thinking overshadows your professionalism? It's not supposed to do that. So he handled it perfectly. I love what he did here. That's all. Back over to Seraphim Nerd.
Yeah, I want to go a bit deep. Other matters that are equally pressing, equally related around race. I think with this KTLA reporter, and you hinted at this also, Captain, is that he doesn't have a vested interest in the topic or in this person. You and I, if we were interviewing, you or I, or and I, if we were to be interviewing Mr. Jackson, we would have more of an intimacy with who he is. And we wouldn't be making a mistake like that. I would know he was, he's a graduate of Morehouse College, that he attended Morehouse College in the 70s. I would be familiar with his work. I know what he looks like. I know intimately he does not look like Mr. Lawrence Fishburne. I know who these people are. He's part of the community, if you want to go that deep. You're invested in pop blackness and black pop culture. And also we would be hard-pressed to be professional. There's not going to be a confusion, but we see this, as you said, we see this happening repeatedly. You can look at this in print, where in print you'd think there's even an easier opportunity to not flub, because you have wiggle room. You have enough time to put the information down, to look at the information, to proofread the information before you write it down. When you're on air is another matter, although you should still have your notes. You should have superior familiarity with the topic or with the person. In print, I see things repeatedly. Usher the rapper. You might say, who else is another person they'll throw out there? A whole host of people who do not rap. They're just black and they are entertainers. Picture, we see all the time a black person, a picture of a black person that's posted that, okay, it could be, I don't know, Salida Ebanks, but it will say Naomi Campbell. It's okay, wait a minute. We know what, you know, that's just, well, we know, oh, you know, black model. And then you just put, you know, you just take natural. It's a very, to me, it's very dispassionate, and it's very dismissive. It's really being dismissive as to who you are. You don't really care enough. It's some black guy. That's really what it boils down to. It's some black guy. You people are interchangeable. That's what it would tell you on a psychological level. Lawrence Fishburne is interchangeable with Sam Jackson. They're not really two separate individuals. You belong, and as the Oracle would say, and we spoke about this earlier, you are only seeing my color. You are only seeing my color. I have been in work environments where I had to deal with people who were related, who were maybe one year or months apart, and had similar sounding names. As if, let's say, Jim and John were cousins. I've dealt with stuff like this. Jim and John were cousins in a certain department, and they were maybe 6 months to a year apart, and they were similar looking. But I made it and this is years ago, Captain, I made it my business to know Jim and John individually, so I would never make that mistake. Now, I know you have dealt with this, and especially black males, perhaps black females. But if you're a minimum amount of black males in a corporate setting, different names, different heights, even different complexion, all they know is there are two black guys on the premises. Your workers, oftentimes your white workers will call you the other person's name, and that person being called you.
That's true.
Years later, because all they see is that a black person. They're seeing through you. They're seeing through you, and it's through right to your color, not to you as an individual. And that's what happened with Mr. Jackson. Now he remembered some black actor had this Matrix commercial, and Sam Jackson's been in everything. So it's easy to assume that was probably Sam Jackson. Didn't really look at him. So I thought it was funny. I assume that, you know, and it went over for a few days, actually. It went over for a few days. And it's you know, I mean, I'm not going to make a mistake between Michael Fassbender and Brad Pitt. You know, they're not interchangeable to me. Or let's say Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise. I mean, that's what the equivalent would be. But we are also forced to know these people intimately. Even cross-racially, as a black person, I have to know that Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt are two different individuals. But when you belong to a group, you know, it's like, you know, you're just some black Denzel, Will Smith, Idris Elba, all of you guys, same chessboard, interchangeable pieces. It's very insulting. Very insulting. All right. Folks, again, Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, Midweek in Review edition. We still have a lot to get into. I think we should take a quick herb. Why can't I speak? Still at 87%. Quick herb alt, black rock, psychedelic soul, classic groove. When we get back, more discourse. I definitely want to talk about this. I would label this perhaps a controversy. It is a controversy, but I think it's more about who made these comments, not what the comments were really about. We're talking about Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, his recent remarks about Americans, again, in his perception now, Americans are more sensitive about race than even during his times when he was a student in college during the mid-60s. So I think he's on to something, personally. I think he's on to something. All right. This is Aki Bergen. Do It Up. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Gotta get on that.
Rocky Bergen, Do It Up. Folks, again, this is the Midweek Review edition of Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. We were talking about, coincidentally, the last one, we were talking about a type of sensitivity involving race with actor Samuel Jackson. And, you know, one would say that perhaps having the notion that Americans are sensitive about race, I wasn't so sure about recent comments coming from Associate Justice of the Supreme Court, Justice Clarence Thomas. His recent remarks, courtesy of a recent article at The Root, Henry Louis Gates's, Skip Gates's The Root. Let me just get into it briefly for what it says in this article, and then we will get to some clips. Actually, you know what? Let's see. Let me make sure that as I'm speaking, I'm setting up the board about what Don Lemon has to say about this also. Don Lemon, I mean, everybody's reporting on this thing, including ourselves, obviously. And, I have a rather nuanced view of Clarence Thomas. I don't agree with everything Mr. Thomas has said in the past, but it seems like he creates such a vituperative, emotional response from liberals, and especially black liberals. He is the go-to person of all liberals when it comes down to being perceived as, if you want to use any kind of negative person, you're going to go to Clarence Thomas when it comes to politics. So anyway, let me go to this article from The Root and just get into just what's happening here. Speaking at, well, the title of this particular piece, Justice Clarence Thomas, Americans are too sensitive about race. Speaking at Palm Beach Atlantic University, Thomas also claimed that northern liberal elites treated him worse than segregated Southerners. Speaking at Palm Beach Atlantic University in West Palm Beach, Florida, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas told a gathering of college students, that Americans today are too sensitive about race, Yahoo News reports. My sadness is that we are probably today more race and difference conscious than I was in the 1960s when I went to school. To my knowledge, I was the first black kid in Savannah, Georgia, to go to a white school. Rarely did the issue of race come up, Thomas said during a chapel service hosted by the university. Now, name a day, it doesn't come up. Differences in race, differences in sex, somebody doesn't look at you right, somebody says something, everybody is sensitive. If I had been as sensitive as that in the 1960s, I'd be still in Savannah. I'd still be in Savannah. Every person in this room has endured a slight. Every person. Somebody has said something that has hurt their feelings or did something to them, left them out. That's a part of the deal, he added. Thomas mentioned that throughout his career, he has experienced more instances of discrimination and poor treatment in the North than the South, Yahoo reports. The worst I have been treated was by the northern liberal elites. The absolute worst I have ever been treated, Thomas said. The worst thing that have been done to me, the worst things that have been said about me by northern liberal elites, not people of Savannah, Georgia. Okay. Again, Mr. Thomas, he is in his mid-60s. He is an esteemed graduate of Yale Law School. Got to get that out. Yale Law School, the second black Supreme Court justice, preceded by, of course, the great Thurgood Marshall, and he's appointed by, nominated by George H.W. Bush. And he's a black conservative. We all know from the early 90s his fiasco, the hearing why can't I think of her name? You remember this, Captain. With the pubic hair on the Coke can, that fiasco. Anita Hill, that's coming back to me. Anita Hill.
So he's a controversial figure. And I think it's more about what he said, that it came from him, more so than the accuracy of what he is talking about. I think he is onto something. But it's Clarence Thomas that's saying it. So people are really digging in. So what I want to do before I get your opinion on this, Captain, is I want to go to a clip with Don Lemon on this. I think, well, actually, it's two clips. Let's go to Don Lemon first. And then I think there's another clip from CNN that's not Don Lemon. All right, so hold on, folks. Let's see if we can get through some of this. It's a rather lengthy clip. I'll see how long we can tolerate it, but it should be interesting. This is Don Lemon and also a few other people on the panel discussing Clarence Thomas. Hold on.
All right, this one is going to spark some controversy. How do I know it? Because we're talking about race, and we're going to talk about Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. Did you hear what he said about race in America? We dwell on it too much. We're all too sensitive about it. And everybody needs to buck up and realize that each and every one of us gets our feelings hurt by something somebody said or did to us. That's a Cliff Notes version of what Justice Thomas reportedly told students yesterday at Palm Beach Atlantic, a non-denominational Christian university in Florida. No TV cameras allowed. But here's what Thomas said, as reported by Yahoo News. He said, "My sadness is that we are probably today more race and difference conscious than I was in the 1960s, than it was in the 1960s when I went to school. To my knowledge, I was the first black kid in Savannah, Georgia, to go to a white school. Rarely did the issue of race come up. Now, name a day it doesn't come up. Differences in race, differences in sex. Somebody doesn't look at you right. Somebody says something. Everybody is sensitive. If I had been as sensitive as that in the 1960s, I'd still be in Savannah." Does Clarence Thomas have a point? Here to talk about it now, attorney and V103 radio personality Mo Ivory in Atlanta, and here in D.C. is Crystal Wright. She's the editor and blogger at conservativeblackchick.com. Okay, so is Clarence Thomas right? Are we too sensitive when it comes to our differences, including race? First to you, Crystal.
Yes, I think we are too sensitive. And it reminds me of when my parents were fighting for civil rights and they were living in the segregated South in Richmond, Virginia. They sat in at lunch counters. They integrated schools. You know why? To end racism. And now we have people who are in the business of wanting to keep racism alive so that they can make money. People like Al Sharpton, and I'm not going to go down the list of things he's done. We have now we're in a situation now where you have people actively looking, hunting Don for racism and to call people homophobes and to talk about sexism so they can make a living off of it, and they are. I mean, they're shaking down corporate America, and now you have a hypersensitivity where many white people are afraid not to even engage in an honest dialogue on race.
Mo, what do you think? Are we too sensitive?
Wow. I would have to disagree with partially what she said. But, no, I don't think that we're too sensitive about it at all. I think we just have a more open forum to talk about it, to bring it out. You know, during the Civil Rights Movement or the time that Clarence Thomas is talking about, it wasn't so acceptable to be able to just come out and say what you felt because you feared that there would be retaliation, whether it was a cross burned on your lawn or whether you would be, you know, attacked. So it wasn't such an environment where we were able to express our views about it. But I don't think that people like Al Sharpton, for example, take the liberty to call the race card. There wouldn't be a race card if something racial wasn't going on. So in many of the instances, almost all of the instances that you see, particularly the Reverend Al Sharpton and other leaders coming out and speaking on issues, you know, cases that involve race or racial profiling or murders involving a racial issue, is because it was race that was invoked in the crime to begin with.
Okay,
so,
all right.
You know, it's not always pulling the race card as easily as she said it. And wait, breaking down corporate America? I mean, that's just – corporate America is one of the biggest places where racism occurs.
Let's not get too far afield here because we're talking about being sensitive about race. And
sure,
he's talking about average everyday Americans mm-hmm. being too sensitive about race. Mm-hmm. You said you partially disagreed with her. What did you agree with her about, Mo?
Well, I do think that there's definitely some people that use race as a way to, you know, profit and as a way to bring themselves to the forefront. So that part of it I do agree with her. But the people that she mentioned I do not think are a part of that at all.
Okay, well,
and I think that most of the times when you see those people come out and have a sensitivity towards race, it's because race has been invoked in the beginning.
All right, Crystal.
Okay, but let's talk. You talked about Al Sharpton. He calls himself a reverend. Tawana Brawley, Al Sharpton has gotten really wealthy off of wrongly accusing people of race. And let's go back to what Clarence Thompson said.
This isn't about Al Sharpton.
Right. Let's go back to what the justice said.
That's always the easiest place to go.
And Reverend Jesse Jackson, when he, I want to give you an example so you don't misrepresent corporate America. Texaco, many of both of you remember, was sued several years ago, back like over a decade, and they were sued. The case never went to trial for the black jelly beans in the jar comment by some employees. And the reason why the case never went to trial was because Texaco was so afraid of their name being drawn through the media constantly, so they settled out of court for nearly $200 million. And there was no admission of wrongdoing, so we don't really know what the accusations were, right?
Crystal, the idea that you're saying that the only reason they settled was because they didn't want their name to be dragged through the mud. No,
let her finish, Mo, and then
you can let her finish.
Go ahead, Crystal. Go ahead. Crystal, I got this. I will referee. Go ahead.
Okay, I know, but she's talking over me.
Go ahead.
What I'm saying is, when my father was the only black in his dental school and he was downgraded and helped the white kids study, the white kids got better grades than him, he didn't let that hold him back. But he also wasn't using his race as a monetary tool. And mm-hmm. the reason why I give the Texaco case is because there's no way post-1964 that anybody could do that single-handedly and force Texaco to give $200 million to people. What I'm saying is our discussion on race, I'm going to disagree with you, Mo, is not honest. White people feel as though they can't criticize the president on his policies without being called racist.
Okay.
That's wrong.
Stand by.
Stand by.
Hang on. Let me jump in here because just recently I flew in this morning with all the weather things, and I got off the plane and my colleagues in D.C. are saying, oh, my gosh, do you hear what people are saying about you regarding the Samuel L. Jackson thing? I'm like, no, I haven't had really a chance. They're saying that you said that Samuel L. Jackson, looks like Lawrence Fishburne. They don't look anything alike. I never said that. I had a conversation on the air with a colleague about the differences in people and not being able to recognize race. It has somehow been turned around by people who are in the business of getting clicks on their website. And sometimes it's more insidious of people of color because they're trying to bring themselves up on your back. And it can become hurtful for something that you never said or never intended to say.
Exactly.
She has Mo, so she has a point, and you have a point with that. It's ridiculous. We must stop that. It is making especially African Americans look bad. We're bringing each other down.
Listen, Don, wait, Crystal, you spoke.
Hang on, go ahead, Mo. Hang on, go ahead, Mo.
Don, I hear what you're saying in terms of the sensitivity and the divisiveness that can create. But I have to go back to something that Crystal said about a white person doesn't even feel like they can criticize President Obama without being called a racist. You know, that is so ridiculous to me, considering that every day on the news a white person is criticizing President Obama. Every day we have groups of people that are saying,
all right, I'm going to stop it there. It's a rather lengthy clip, and I think it proves my point that now everybody there was black, and it was just different points of view discussing race, and it was getting rather testy. So up to the point of actually listening to these clips, I wasn't sure about what Justice Thomas was talking about. But I think he tapped into something that, if we're going to be honest, I think people are more sensitive than ever, even post-civil rights, about race. And there's more things I will extrapolate on regarding this notion, other things that make me consider that, I think he's onto something. Captain, what are your thoughts?
Well, as I said to you behind the scenes, I'm not really qualified, due to my age, to talk about what Clarence Thomas went through in the 1960s. That needs to be a person who's 65 or older. The Oracle would be great an older person who's still really lucid, would be great to talk to them about it. But what I can talk about is from, let's say, 1975 on. I can definitely talk about that. When we had shows such as Archie Bunker and other shows where they did it in a balance, it was balanced, but they used the word, and I'm going to say it, nigger, which is now you have to say the N-word. They used the word spick, which is the derogatory term for Latin people. They used the words faggot, you know. Now you can't say that at all. So, and coming up during this time, 70s, 80s, early part of 90s, when people called you, let's say even you're a fat guy, you know what you did as a fat guy? You can't do that now because it's body shaming. You kept it moving, and you just did what you had to do. If someone called you nigger, you might have got upset, but you kept it moving, and you did what you had to do. Here's another thing we have to look at. The Internet. Now, conceptually, the Internet, 1960s, they had the concept, but it really didn't commercialize to the 1990s, the Internet. The Internet really is a sensationalized format where you can over-sensationalize anything at this given point. So something happens to you, you put it on Facebook. Another person picks it up, sends it to their friends. Then they tweet about it. The next thing you know, it goes totally viral. And then people are blogging about it. And then the next thing you know, CNN picks it up. MSNBC picks it up. Fox News picks it up. And it was just a little, someone said, oh, you're fat. Or someone called me the N-word. Didn't have the Internet in 1960s. You did have it conceptually. But people weren't logging on. So if you look at it from that standpoint, coming from the 70s, my standpoint, and also the fact that we have the Internet has made us definitely more sensitive, hypersensitive. You get a reaction right away. Right away, you get emotional. It was also interesting to see the different points of view, you know, there on the Don Lemon show with the people he had on there. That was great to see that. You know, everybody got emotional. You see what happens when you talk about race. It brings in everybody. But that's just my overall opinion. I think from that standpoint, going from that way with it, he is onto something. Because we didn't have the Internet. Didn't have the Internet. And I remember those shows, Archie Bunker and a few others. And I remember what happened to me coming up. Yeah, you just kept moving with it. Yeah, well, stupid white guy. You know, curse him out and you keep moving. That was it. No big deal. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Yeah, we were speaking about this behind the scenes, Captain, as you just noted. And if people are going to be honest, you have to think, how did we arrive with being able to use the quote-unquote nigger terminology, just black or white, rightfully or wrongfully, in the 60s and especially in the 70s, in television programming and in movies. And it seems like Hollywood might have been more at its experimental stage or willing to be more experimental during the 70s. I mean, you could not have a show like All in the Family today because of sensitivities. Now, when you factor that in, we're talking about a show that was truly groundbreaking. A lot of programming during that point was quite groundbreaking. Even someone like Red Fox with Sanford and Son, who was a black curmudgeon based on a British series entitled Steptoe and Son, he would say sometimes off the wall, politically incorrect thing. The notion of political correctness doesn't come about till, let's say, the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, the political correct movement or the notion of political correctness is a response to racial sensitivities. But I think it's to the point now where to racial sensitivities that has become inaccurate. You could be sensitive to the point where now you are dishonest. You know, the needle went in the opposite direction. Instead of perhaps having some kind of medium point, some kind of balance point, now the needle's so far over that we're dishonest because of political correctness. And let's see what others have to say about this. 703, welcome to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
Hey, Captain Kirk, D-Bird, this is Vice of the Life. Calling.
Hey.
What's up? What's
about
up, man?
About to be snow-covered D.C.
We're right there with you, man.
Hey, I'm an old man of a certain age, so I went through the 70s like you gentlemen. And let's not romanticize it too much, because I think what was different then was there was a variety, but at the end of the day, it was still comedy. Wasn't a lot of dramatic series with, you know, certain themes. And then you had Roots that came along. I think there was a lot of things pre-Roots and post-Roots, I think, in regards to sensitivity. So let's not rose-color everything. I mean, I came along then. You know, the Jeffersons, at the end of the day, you know, he was a businessman, but at the end of the day, he was a caricature. Good times, had a black father in the home, took him out. There was a lot behind the scenes. In regards to political correctness, I think, let's just remember, there are more minorities and other people who want their voices heard. Now, I can, you know, I'm not going to go back and do the historian thing in regards to television, but I think the point of demarcation in regards to the N-word was when NWA came out with their Straight Outta Compton CD. I just think anything pre that, you heard the N-word in popular culture, but it was here and there. And then afterward, it just sort of exploded. And then it really exploded, I think, after, I don't know what y'all had in New York, but we had something called The Box. Well, basically, you know, videos, literally anybody mother can make a rap video. And it just got made.
Yeah, we had that too.
And I think really it's just that sort of street, unfiltered crap. Hip-hop just sort of got mainstream, and it just sort of, it became like herding cats, and then it's just sort of, the genie was out the bottle. But that's just my take on it.
Well, you know what? I hear what you're saying. I don't want you to think that we're you know, putting out there that we thought that the 60s and 70s were rose-colored, or we're looking at the rose-colored glasses. I think that's kind of the critique that's been levied against Clarence Thomas. But I will say this, once you hear this clip, and I put this out there comedically, but this clip, which is classic, you heard it like 75, but you wouldn't hear it today.
All right, Mr. Wilson, you've done just fine on the Rorschach. Your papers are in good order. The file's fine. No difficulty with your motor skills. And I think you're probably pretty ready for this job. We got one more kind of psychological test we always do here. It's just a word association. I'll throw you out a few words. Anything that comes to your mind, just throw back at me, okay? It's just kind of an arbitrary thing. Like if I said dog, you'd say...
Tree.
Tree. Dog?
Tree.
Fast?
Slow.
Rain?
Snow.
White?
Black.
Bean?
Pod.
Negro?
Whitey.
Tar baby?
What'd you say?
Tar baby?
Buffet.
Colored?
Redneck.
Jungle bunny.
Peck of wood.
Burr head.
Cracker.
Deer chucker.
White trash.
Jungle bunny.
Hunky.
Spade.
Hunky hunky.
Nigger.
Dead hunky.
All right. That still holds up, believe it or not. My thinking is we can't see that today. Matter of fact, this is pre-cable. Cable wasn't even around at this point. So how is it that we could have that in 1974, 75? And you know, there's nothing that comes close to that now. We're phonier now, I think. We're going backwards. I think Clarence Thomas is onto something. I think he's onto something. Captain?
No, I'm here.
No, I'm just asking.
I'm definitely. You're asking if he's onto something? Hey, I think there's something there. I think there's something there. You know, as I said before, you know, I don't know about the 60s. I can read about the 60s. You know, I can YouTube the 60s. You know, he is the one to speak on that. I only speak on my experience. And I think, you know, we are a bit more sensitive due to
and
the reasons that I said.
And I tell you something else that Crystal Wright from GOP Black Chick, she tapped onto something about people now, some people have been able to maneuver themselves into a position to make money based on race and difference, or to capitalize on perceived slight based on race or difference. And I tell you how that the next topic when we talk about Michael Sam and by connection Jason Collins, people are now figuring out a way to maneuver based on sex, gayness, blackness. Some of that is going on. And I think Michael Sam is an example of that. Now, here's another clip, quickly, of the Clarence Thomas issue from CNN. This is not Don Lemon. More people discussing it. After this, I want to segue into this controversy with, I guess he might be a third-round NFL draft pick, Michael Sam. He came out as a gay male, black gay male, a few days ago. You know, listen, I don't have a dog in this race. I don't know what that is. But the fact that you have to announce it when you're trying to go for an NFL draft pick, you would think that might be counterintuitive, counterproductive. I think it's representative of what Crystal Wright said when she said that, hey, some people are getting their hustles on because of this. Some people are getting their hustles on because of whatever your protected class is. His protected class is black, but probably more gay than black now, because he's rolling with that. So let's go to another clip on this Clarence Thomas debacle. I don't want to call it debacle, but Clarence Thomas controversy, and then we're going to get into this latest topic with Michael Sam. Hold on.
Is only the second black justice ever to serve on the Supreme Court. Now Clarence Thomas raising all sorts of eyebrows with some of his latest comments about race in America.
All right, Thomas said this yesterday at Palm Beach Atlantic University. He said, "My sadness is that we are probably today more race and difference conscious than I was in the 1960s when I went to school. Rarely did the issue of race come up. Now, name a day it doesn't come up. Differences in race, differences in sex, somebody doesn't look at you right, somebody says something. Everybody is sensitive. If I had been as sensitive as that in the 1960s, I'd still be in Savannah."
Joining us now, CNN senior legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin and political commentator Mark Lamont Hill, two gentlemen that I think will have a lot of things to say about the topic. Jeffrey, let's start with you because we know that you have written extensively in your book, The Oath, about these the justices, and you have a better sense of these people than anybody else. Give a sense of where you think he might be coming from, and if it's it clearly isn't aligned with how he felt before.
Right. This is very consistent with how he's expressed himself about race throughout his entire career, which is that
race is something to be overcome by individual initiative, that any problems you might have can be overcome by hard work and not collective action. I mean, what's so remarkable about the statement, of course, is that it neglects the fact that, you know, in the mid-60s when he was a kid, you could get killed if you were a black person for speaking about race. So that might be one reason people didn't talk about it a lot. And also in that period, that was the time of Martin Luther King and Medgar Evers and John. A lot of people were talking about race. So it isn't like people didn't talk about race in the John Lewis, that's the name I was thinking of, was. So the idea that race was not a factor in the 60s is pretty hard to.
Mark, talk
about
that. When you hear someone like Clarence Thomas, and let's, you know, he is a justice of the Supreme Court. There are not many who've ever reached that status. He's a leader in this country. When you hear a black leader in this country speak like that, what's it mean to you?
It's severely disturbing. I won't call it disappointing because I didn't expect anything different from Justice Thomas. He's had a long history of walking through doors and closing them behind him. He acknowledges no part that affirmative action and other things like that played in his own life, yet he wants to close the door for others. He suggests that race doesn't matter, that race shouldn't matter, should not be a factor in any decision-making processes. It simply ignores realities that race persists, of race that persists today. As seeing him as the Supreme Court justice, it's even more disturbing because courts have the power to make decisions. And if they make the decisions based on a premise of color blindness, that is, we don't see color, we don't acknowledge color, we pretend difference doesn't matter, that's very disturbing. The goal of our nation shouldn't be to be post-racial, it should be to be post-racist. So for him to even lament the fact that the country acknowledges difference to me is problematic because we should acknowledge difference, we should acknowledge race. It just shouldn't be a social demerit. And in the 1960s, the time that he's referring to, it was a social demerit. It's always been a social demerit through Jim Crow, through slavery. And to pretend that people weren't talking about it, as Jeffrey said, is simply ahistorical.
You know, it's so funny. I think about this, and it makes me crazy because this is one of the instances where I have so many questions for him. And Jeffrey, I wonder, is this just, you know, we're all guilty of this on occasion, little revisionist history. You know, we tend to look back and say things were better back then. He knows, and the history books tell us things were not good in 1960s Georgia.
Well, I mean, but this is his this is his take. I mean, you know, and also this
and
is a historical divide in even within the African American community, the tradition of Booker T. Washington, which is, you know, self-help, don't rely on the government, don't rely on anyone besides yourself, versus the broader tradition of W.E.B. Du Bois, of, you know, collective action, Martin Luther King, that you know, the society, not just individuals, have to overcome these problems. But, you know, this is why Clarence Thomas is such a deeply unpopular figure within the black community, because his views are very much out of step with the broader black
community.
There's
almost nothing from the bench yet, off the bench, saying a lot that has a lot of people right now talking. All right.
It's not just upsetting. It's because so many people's realities are so very different from what he is saying it is. So, gentlemen.
All right, enough of that.
Can I say something?
Sure.
You see where they took it? He just said sensitivity, and then everything else came out of that argument. You see? Do you realize what just happened there? He's talking about Clarence Thomas. That's the heat. Talking about sensitivity during that time. And then they extrapolated everything else out of his argument, which he did not say. They just made an assumption. And you know what they say when you assume, you know, based on his track record, he's guilty, he's this, he's that, because he didn't do this, he didn't. Unbelievable. Let's stay on the subject at hand. You see, these people are incredible, well-spoken, but they are also incredible in the way they do things. They just take it and put it somewhere else. It's on a different platform. I'm totally amazing, totally amazing. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Well, you know, listen, Captain, you have to be a critical thinker, which is what we try to impart to our listenership. You have to be a critical thinker to be able to even sift through all this stuff, whether it's done at Fox, whether it's done at MSNBC, or whether it's done at CNN. And what you said is correct. Is that, matter of fact, listening to Rob Redding, who I'm on there quite a bit as a caller, and he was starting to dig in on this topic, angle he has. He has a very racialized angle to get people's emotions up. That's what he does. God bless him. That's the way he, you know, the way he likes to conduct his show. But he was going on and on about Clarence Thomas said that black people are sensitive about race. Clarence Thomas didn't say that black people were sensitive about race. He said Americans. He was very non-race specific, and really, or really being more multi-layered, saying that this is an American problem. He didn't say this is a black American problem or blacks are more sensitive about race. He said people are more sensitive about race. And then he even said it was more race and difference. So he even opened it up beyond just race. It's just different. You said this yourself, Kathy. You thought you brought in quickly in a diatribe. You said something about obesity or the term fat.
Yes.
You know, those who are weight challenged, quote unquote, they have risen to a protected class. We've spoken about this at Afro Nerd, that to be fat, some are likening it to being black or Latin or Asian or gay or what have you. Fatness is now a protected class. We know this. So that's a difference. And I think he is on to something, but it's because Clarence Thomas said it. If some liberal said it, they would have extrapolated it differently, even though he or she could have said the same damn thing. Now, I want to go into another topic that kind of proves, I think, Mr. Thomas's thesis on this, because when he said the term differences, why shouldn't he say? Now I'm doing what Redding did, not so much what Thomas said, but what Crystal Wright of Black GOP Chick, her website. What she said about some who positioning themselves to get a hustle on out of this. I think that Jason Collins, the basketball player that came out last year at the twilight of his career, it came off as if he came out in an effort. It appears this way. He came out in an effort to garner more play time, to get at somebody to pick him up, to be noticed. Because really, and listen, I don't know about this. I have no, but all I can say, it comes off as if someone is disclosing their sexuality for some kind of gain, because it doesn't add anything to the conversation. It doesn't add anything to your career. It doesn't do anything for what you have to do on the court. People are concerned about your performance. I don't think that your sexuality adds anything to gameplay, unless there's something I'm missing. So we saw this with Jason Collins. I don't know if it's really panned out for him, because I don't believe he's been picked up. Matter of fact, we're closing in on a year. April 19th last year, he publicly came out. That's Mr. Collins. Now, we have a younger dude, Michael Sam, who is a college player who is NFL bound, and he came out. And you might know more about this, Captain. From my understanding, he's a third round pick. I mean, you know, maybe in it to really get picked, he went there with this. What was it, 24-year-old man, 24-year-old young dude? What is this?
That's correct.
What is this?
That's correct. I really don't know what it is. As I said before on this show, that the military, actually, they were genius with their policy, their original policy of don't ask, don't tell. What do I care about your sexuality? If you want to be the 60-year-old guy sleeping with the 19-year-old, why is that my business? Or the 50-year-old guy and you're sleeping with four women, why is that my business? If you want to be the homosexual sleeping with, you know, homosexual male sleeping with another male, why is that my business? Why are you dragging me into your bedroom? Everyone should be ashamed of themselves, to tell you the truth. You know? They used to call it something years ago. They used to call that a peep show. I don't need to be in your peep show. Come on. You know? So I don't know if this is a ploy or what, because they do say he can play. The kid definitely can play, you know, the young man definitely can play. But that's third or fourth round draft pick. The signing bonus is not going to be as big. But now you come out like this, you know, there's a lot of other endorsements that may come your way that could be very lucrative. I'm not going to say that this is the case, but whether you're gay or heterosexual, as the great Afro Nerd said, and he nailed it with that, it doesn't add to your playing ability. Doesn't add at all. And at the end of the day, why you got in this position is because of your playing ability. So I don't know what it is. Time will tell down the line. We will see what happens down the line. But I don't know where it is, what it is. I'm right there with you, Sir Afro Nerd. Back over to you.
Yeah, you know, also his father, Michael Sam Sr., I think there might have been, it came off as if he was supportive at first, and now maybe not so supportive. I'm looking at brothersonsports.com, and it says that his father, let me read this briefly. It says, Sam's teammates have given him tons of support over the last year, and the media is heralding his decision to come out as a gay man, but one man, his father, has not been as receptive to his son's sexual orientation. The New York Times reports that Michael Sam Sr. was celebrating his birthday at a local Denny's restaurant in the Dallas area last Tuesday when he received a text message from his son, "Dad, I'm gay." The next message disturbed him so that he could finish his meal. I couldn't eat no more, so I went to Applebee's to have drinks, said Sam Sr. I don't want my grandkids raised in that kind of environment. I'm old school. I'm a man and a woman type of guy. Sam Sr.'s stance is quite different from the outpouring of support and widespread praise his son has received since making the decision to come out before the NFL draft. Michael Sam Sr. loves his son and has said so and wants him to continue to excel in the next level of his football career, but he still feels how he feels. There is an inner dilemma highlighted by his remark that a Hall of Fame defensive end Deacon Jones will be turning over in his grave. As a black man, we have so many hurdles to cross, said Sam Sr. This is just one Sam has to cross. I don't know what to think. You know, like I said, I'm more of, I don't know what this does as far as your career. What does this do as far as your physical ability to play basketball? As a matter of fact, I'll go one step further, Captain.
Football.
What did I say, basketball?
Yeah, football.
I'm sorry. I'll go one step further. I was listening and looking at a program. I forgot the name of it, but it's a behind the scenes or televised version of Radio Personality that comes on towards the early part of the evening. I can't remember the name of it, but they have several shows that are interconnected, that they're terrestrial radio personalities, and they have clips of their shows to be seen, to be televised. So they have televised versions of what they're doing in the studio. Anyway, one of the shows, I think, is out of Atlanta. One of the shows, a Ricky Smiley show. Ricky Smiley show. Ricky has a co-host that I perceive as a black gay male. I don't know, listen. I think he definitely has that affect. I think he's the black gay dude on that show. That guy had said, Why are gay people coming out? He said it as, I suspect, as a gay person. He said to straight people are not announcing their straightness. They just go about their business.
Mm-hmm.
If you, whoever you are about as far as your orientation, You just go about your business of life, and then one day they see you with the dude. I mean, if you're going to try to normalize it, then normalize it. But it's got to come to a point where you stop, that you should have to stop announcing everything. That's because I'm not announcing that I'm a straight guy. You just see me walk in with a girl one day. Oh, that's the, you know, no one. You know, that's what I do, and how I've done. That's what I do. So why is the gay guy having to constantly have to announce it? For what purpose? What does it do? That's what I'm confused about. That's why I think the hustle game that Crystal Wright was talking about when we're referring to Clarence Thomas, this is a hustle. This is a, at this point, when we're talking about high profile positions, because if he was not working, or because people forget, this is a job. People forget that the sports is a job. If you are going for some legal position, some medical position, I sincerely doubt you're going to announce the sexuality before your job interview. It's not going to happen. But because this is a high-profile job, and you may feel you have to manipulate some folks, you're going to make this announcement. That's it. I figured it out, Captain. That's it. Hustle game. We got less than a minute, folks. Of course, we have our stupendous, infamous Grindhouse show coming up this Saturday. Hopefully, we'll probably be snowed in, but we should still be able to broadcast. Any closing remarks, Cap, before we get on up out of here?
You got to be careful. Remember now, these people are, as they say, gay people. Homosexuals are a protective class. So we have to be careful. You got to treat them very nicely.
I don't think I was being insulting. I'm just thinking this. I'm just saying I think that some folks, differences, race, whatever, they got to hustle. That's all. We'll wait for the emails, Captain. All right, folks, listen. We will see you on Saturday at 6 p.m. for the Grindhouse. It's been a pleasure. It's going out. Lowrider by Slapback. See you on Saturday, 6 p.m.
Damn, bringing back people.